Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of how the Russians might respond to the UN report on the August 21st chemical weapons attack in Damascus that clearly indicates the Assad regime used sarin gas fired in rockets with Cyrillic markings from regime-held territory. Nina Khrushcheva, a professor in the graduate program at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute, joins us to discuss how Putin, who is riding high on the world stage, might dodge this bullet. Then we'll hear from veteran UN correspondent Ian Williams about UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's condemnation of the use of sarin against civilians as a despicable war crime for which the international community has a responsibility to hold the perpetrators responsible. We will discuss whether holding Syria to account for a chemical weapons attack will get in the way of the Kerry-Lavrov deal and whether the U.S. could make a Chapter 7 case to the General Assembly after an expected Russian veto in the Security Council. Then finally, on the second anniversary of the start of the Occupy Wall Street movement, we will speak with Nathan Schneider, an editor of the news analysis website Waging Nonviolence and the first reporter who covered the planning meetings that led to Occupy Wall Street. We will discuss what he sees as the surprising success of the disappointing failure of a movement that, in spite of America's historical amnesia about its radical past, may emerge anew. And joining us now is Nina Khrushcheva, who's a professor in the graduate program of international affairs at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. She's also an editor of and a contributor to Project Syndicate and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of Imagining Nabokov, Russia Between Art and Politics. She's currently working on a book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Mind. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nina Khrushcheva.
Thank you, Ian.
And clearly, President Putin has played a weak hand skillfully of late, while the American side arguably has played a strong hand clumsily. But how is President Putin going to dodge this bullet over what the UN report? Now, it was not mandated to hold anybody responsible for this chemical weapons attack. But the evidence that was presented in the UN report is overwhelming in pointing the finger at Syria.
Well, I think the evidence before was also quite convincing that the Assad regime, to a degree, maybe not he gave his own orders, although I doubt that any big decisions are made without him in some capacity. So there was quite convincing evidence, and now the UN report. I think the way Putin is going to dodge that bullet, has been dodging that bullet altogether, is that he would say, well, although they were not placed to assign blame, they didn't assign blame, and so there's still much consideration who indeed. So there's no clear evidence that the rebels didn't steal the weapons and didn't use them, so he would continue to cite vagueness in not in evidence but in direct responsibility, and so far it has been working for him.
So, and on the American side, it would seem that given that Putin, in a paradoxical way, appears to have saved President Obama from a trap of his own making. With this red line, then it would seem that the U.S. is also capable of some serious hypocrisy by ignoring this report so that it doesn't interfere with the Kerry-Lavrov deal, which I imagine they really want to happen, don't they?
Well, it is. I mean, there is. I don't want to say American hypocrisy because America certainly means well. It's just, you know, pesky policy gets in the way or public opinion, is that they've been shown that they are capable of moving their target quite easily, because before it was after August 21st, we're going to go immediately, oh, and now we're not going to go, and then we can delay another month. So they've already shown that they can delay another month or something. So it doesn't seem that if the deal goes through and indeed Assad is willing to be somewhat open. I don't expect openness from him, but at least somewhat open and somewhat at least pretend that he's actually not going to kill his people as openly as he was doing it before, I imagine that the deal is going to go through because at this point, this is the best solution. Whichever way they got to it, it's the best solution that any country or any side has gotten.
So what's your understanding, Nina Kasheva, about how this is playing in Russia? Not that public opinion necessarily counts. I mean, one of the paradoxes of Putin, my understanding is that he's extremely unpopular in where he's situated, in the Kremlin, in the capital, but not so in the countryside.
Well, he's still popular over 60%. I mean, whoever tells us that that he's not, you know, and we've had this conversation before, he's never gone below 60 or even 65. And even when I was watching the mayoral elections that just took place in Moscow, the center did fail his mayoral candidate, Sabanin, but the periphery, the sort of the suburbs of Moscow, voted for the Putin candidate. So he's not as unpopular as one would want or one may think. And public opinion matters. And so Putin actually does parade himself as a victor in the world stage. And sometimes in the last, certainly, 4 or 5 years, it was difficult for him to pretend that he's that important. But in the last, 5 months, he has proven that he indeed is sort of great country leader as he's been convincing Russia he is for 13 years now.
Well, a lot of people in the West think he's done a fairly masterful job of late.
Well, I think he did. I mean, you know, I would doubt his sincere reasons. I mean, actually, I think his reasons are despicable because it is all about his own power and nothing to do with Syria or helping the world situation in any way. But he was very masterful. Look, he's nothing but stupid and... I also think that he, kind of the tip down that he has experienced since he came back to the Kremlin as president in 2012, he reconsidered. He get less ridiculous with his kissing tigers and, you know, walking around or riding around bare-chested and sort of looked into politics and called back his great capacity as a KGB operative in the West and try to figure out in insidious means how he can get on top. And so far, he's been working for him.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Nina Kasheva, who's a professor in the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. She's also an editor of and a contributor to Project Syndicate and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of Imagining Nabokov, Russia Between Art and Politics. She's currently working on a book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. Now, it would seem... It's coming out in March. Well, there you have another excuse to talk with you, Nina.
Great, thank you.
So, obviously, it would not be helpful to have humiliated Russia or Putin by bombing his only sort of ally, if you will, and certainly his only base in the Mediterranean. And to that extent, this deal, at least, avoids that. And I imagine, though, what is the upside, though, if there are no rewards, I guess, in foreign policy, but is there something further that can be done with, because the president, Obama, has indicated that he wants to kind of apply what's happening with Assad, the Russian-American cooperation on getting rid of Assad's chemical weapons, maybe that can be applied to Iran. Do you see that as a possibility?
Yes, I do. And it depends very much how, if America goes with this particular plan, if Assad doesn't have a fit and say, well, I'm not showing you, I only am going to give you information, because we also don't know. Dictators are very unpredictable people in many ways, so he can decide that he wants some of it but not another. We also don't know where Putin may choose to take an issue with whatever Barack Obama may say to him. But if Putin feels important in the world stage, Putin actually would want to continue that. And instead of being an international spoiler, which he has become, he actually would like to be a player instead. And we witness that kind of somewhat constructive behavior to a degree after 9/11, when George Bush sort of recognized their, I mean, they were both very religious people and therefore recognized each other. And for a while, until 2006, Russia was rather helpful and not an international spoiler in any way. So that can happen, but I think there are very many ifs, who gets upset with whom at what time. Another thing that I find very important, and I think this part of negotiations probably we can attribute to very good dynamic between Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov and John Kerry. And I think that also can bring some good results, or reasonably good results, when Russia, rather than being a spoiler, actually can be helpful.
So in terms of the morality or the moral arguments involved in the Syria agony, they're precious few to find. There's no real moral consistency on either side, in the sense that the U.S. has done nothing about over 100,000 people dying, or except arming the rebels and doing that very ambivalently. And there's no question that on Russia's support for Assad is extremely cynical. Is there a case here? One expert on Russia said to me the other day that Putin has a greater stomach for the kind of brutality that Assad has been is capable of and proving himself capable of. She referenced Chechnya and the brutal war that he prosecuted there.
Well, he certainly has a greater stomach for violence. I mean, and look at the Russian protests that has been going on since 2010, 2011. I mean, they are brutally, not violently, but rather brutally suppressed. So he's a KGB man. Of course he has stomach for violence. I mean, that's, KGB is basically Gulag, so let's just not forget that. But I think the moral argument at this point is very difficult to play for any side, because after 2.5 years, and as I said, Barack Obama's moving target, where we are, what do we need to do, we're moral today, or we can wait another month tomorrow, I think it is a very bad, I mean, we really, at this point, we only hope that somehow Putin will convince his buddy Assad that disarmament and less brutality would be better for him in long term rather than in short term. And I think that's the only hope that we have right now, because bombing them to freedom right now from the White House side is not going to bring any good results.
And do you think that there'll be some moral outrage about what this UN report indicates is the regime, the Assad regime's use of sarin against its own civilian population? Do you think that's going to pass, that nobody really wants to take this to the Chapter 7 level and enforce a Russian veto?
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, let's see whether it's going to be taken to the Chapter 7. And I think it just would be very difficult and very unconvincing right now to go and bomb, even with the UN report. Because ultimately, when I looked at the report, all the information that was given today, we sort of knew. It's just good to know that it came from the United Nations. But I don't think it changes anything on the ground at this point, because bombing right now, especially with what's going on today in Washington, and nobody even paid attention to that report. So by the time whoever that shooter at the Navy Yard was and they figure it out, it will already be 3 days of the United Nations report. I think that also, the timing is really not on the Syrian side, is not on the United Nations side. We'll see what happens. But I think I would absolutely imagine Russians demand that with the agreement in Geneva, it's going to be played out. And the United Nations report would be put on hold, unless Germany, England, France, the United States would immediately go to Ban Ki-moon and say we right away, but I don't know it's going to happen.
Well, Ban Ki-moon himself, though, has said some fairly, provocative condemnation of this. You know, he called it a despicable war crime, and called on the world. I trust you can all join me in condemning this despicable crime. The international community has a responsibility to hold the perpetrators accountable.
But did they call the meeting already, or not yet? Because that I missed.
I think they're having a meeting as we speak. But my sense is that this is not going to go beyond rhetoric.
That was my point too.
Yeah, that probably they just want to keep the Kerry Lavrov thing moving and just deal with the chemical weapon. I think Obama wants to talk about Obamacare and not about Syria and all of these distractions. That's my sense.
Well, he wants to, I mean, today he already talked about middle class and all these other things.
Right.
No, as much as I find the UN report so important, I also think that in some ways we didn't learn more than we already knew. We kind of assumed that was the regime role. And they pushed the rhetoric. But at this point, I think with all the back and forth, at many times, I think rhetoric cannot work that well. I really think that at this point, they really need to see something, need to do something really horrible. Like Russia needs to back out of the Geneva, or Assad needs to do something horrible yet again. Then we can start a conversation on Chapter 7 again.
Right.
But for now, I think they would really want to play it out.
Well, Nina Khrushcheva, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Nina Khrushcheva, who's a professor in the graduate program of international affairs at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. She's also the editor of and a contributor to Project Syndicate and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of Imagining Nabokov, Russia Between Art and Politics. She's currently working on a book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking with a veteran UN correspondent.
Oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, war is not the answer. Politician and them bobo nyan, war is not the answer. Taking over the solution, Rasta says, war is not the answer. Tell the politician and them start drop them bomb, war is not the answer. Taking over the solution, Rasta says, war.